So, for the last few weeks, we've been exploring our theme, Ready, with our giant runner here. We talked about that. And we introduced our theme song. You remember that? People Get Ready. I'm Rod Stewart. And, you know, theme songs are something that kind of new to us. It seems a little loud today. Kind of new to us. Last year was the first time we did a theme song to go along with our Back to Basics theme. Remember that last year? First time we ventured down the theme song road. You know, there's not always going to be an easy, an obvious connection between our theme and a song that might work. It's a tricky business. Not one to be taken lightly. But I think we did a good job with this one this year, right? I feel good about it. I hope you do too. And if you were paying attention last week to Ted May's prayer, you heard him use some of the words from this song in his prayer in a beautiful way. So thank you, Ted, for doing that. We kind of talked about how the idea of being ready probably makes most of us think, first of all, about being ready for the Lord's return to earth. And we spent some time wondering about whether we are really ready in the sense of longing for, in the sense of being anxious for His return, and even praying for His soon return. We've seen that Jesus teaches that we need to be ready. Remember this? So always be ready, because you don't know the day your Lord will come. So you must always, you must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at a time when you do not expect Him. Be ready when? All the time. Because we don't know when He's coming. Okay, so now we're all pretty well caught up. Bill and Susan, y'all are caught up with us now, so glad y'all are here today. Hope y'all get to meet Bill and Susan and their daughter from South Baton Rouge Church. I've known them for many years, and they're camping this weekend, and so they came over to join us. Hope y'all get to meet them. And the good thing is that Jesus didn't just leave His disciples here with, be ready, good luck with that. Remember, He had already told them to be ready for anything. We kind of talked about that last week. If you remember, He even told them to be ready to let go of things which seem so sure and so unshakable. And then that things that are so ingrained in the DNA of who we are as church people. What it means to be faithful followers. Remember, to those disciples back then, He told them to be ready to let go of the temple of God, and all that it had meant for centuries to their identity as God's chosen people. And then we spent some time wondering kind of aloud and asking questions about what that kind of being ready for anything might look like for us today. Have you been wrestling with that any this week? I hope you have, because that's one of the things we need to be wrestling with. Anyway, well, today, and then 2 weeks from today, we're going to look at a couple of examples that Jesus used to help His disciples have a better understanding of what it means to be ready. And I'm not actually sure if we're going to finish it in two sermons. You better be ready for more than two. But anyway, right after these verses, at the end of chapter 24 of Matthew, it concludes with a short parable. And then chapter 25, Jesus gives us more parables. You know, a parable is just a short story to help Him illustrate a point. And He used all of these to help describe what He meant by being ready. And you're going to recognize probably all of these stories. They include the parable of the 10 bridesmaids or virgins, as it says, and their lamps. Y'all remember that story? The parable of the talents, which, by the way, was discussed in our Wednesday night class a couple of weeks ago. Then the parable of the sheep and the goats. And then the one we're going to talk about today, the parable of the wise and the wicked servants. All of these stories are about being ready when the Lord returns. But to start with, let me tell you something that I learned while getting ready for this that was shocking to me. Probably not to y'all. Y'all probably already knew this, but to me it was shocking. Each of these parables are going to be really familiar to us. I had heard them all before. I had read them all before, like most of you guys had. And each of these stories draws a distinction between two different types of people. And at this point, I was going to put up one of those memes about there are two types of people in the world. Y'all seen some of those? But there's so many of them, and they're so great. I couldn't choose which one to use. So anyway, but at any rate, these stories that Jesus tells, these parables, describe two different types of people, the ready and the not ready. And the most obvious way of thinking about these two types of people, the ready and the not ready, or at least the way I always thought about them when these stories came up, was this. You got the believers in God and the non-believers in God. The believers are the ones who are ready for the Lord's return. The non-believers are the ones, obviously, who are not ready for the Lord's return. But what makes Jesus such a marvelous teacher? And what makes his parables so compelling and so memorable and so challenging? Is that Jesus rarely goes for the obvious. And he certainly did not go for the obvious in any of these parables about being ready. Because in all of these parables, as we're going to see, Jesus is not comparing believers to non-believers. He's not contrasting church members with the unchurched. He's not comparing those who are church people or believers in God to those who claim to be spiritual but not religious, which, by the way, is a growing number of people in this world today. Oh, I'm spiritual but not religious. Y'all probably have met some people like that. Well, he's not comparing those kinds of people. Everybody, every person that Jesus talks about in all of these stories that we're going to be talking about, all of them, the ready and the not ready, all of them acknowledge Jesus as Lord. Readiness does not consist of whether you go to church or don't go to church, whether you believe in God or don't believe in God, whether you know in your head that He is the Master or not. Being ready is more than that. That's crazy, huh? That's surprising, huh? In the context of being ready for His return, it doesn't seem like a good idea to be caught by surprise, does it? It really doesn't. Here's the overarching theme of all of these parables that Jesus told His disciples right here in these verses that we're going to be looking at for the next couple of weeks. The theme is, there are going to be surprises on the day of His return. And it's not going to be surprises about, oh, the unbelievers are not ready. No, we know that, okay? We all know that. That doesn't surprise us. The surprise is going to be who's in and who's out, who's ready, who's not, within the company of believers. But we don't have to be taken by surprise. Jesus doesn't want us to be taken by surprise. That's why he told these stories. That's why he took the time to talk about it, what it means to be ready, and why he kept telling different stories to get the point across. He kept repeating himself so that we would get the point. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into the first one here, the first parable. See if we can figure out what Jesus is trying to say to his people, about avoiding being surprised on the day of his return. Jesus said, "A faithful, sensible servant is one to whom the master can give the responsibility of managing his other household servants and feeding them. If the master returns and finds that the servant has done a good job, there will be a reward. I tell you the truth, the master will put that servant in charge of all he owns. But what if the servant is evil and thinks, 'My master won't be back for a while,' and he begins beating the other servants and partying and getting drunk? The master will return unannounced and unexpected, and he will cut the servant to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Y'all have heard that one before, haven't you? But here it is. You see it right here, verse 48. The evil servant says, "What if the servant is evil and thinks, 'My master won't be back for a while'?" Jesus isn't talking about unbelievers here. He's talking about believers. He's talking about people who say, "Oh yeah, Jesus, yeah, I'm all about Jesus." He's talking about people in the church. Well, obviously, he's not talking about people in our church, okay? Let's get that straight to begin with. He's not talking about anybody here at Tammany Oaks Church of Christ, right? But still, the point is, in this story, the role of the wicked servant who ends up in a very terrible place, not being played by an unbeliever, but by a believer. Problem with this servant is not that he denies that there is a master. It's not that he even denies that the master is going to return. The problem is that he thinks the master's return is not going to be for a while. Not going to happen anytime soon. He won't be back for a while, is what it said in the verses we read. Or he's staying away for a long time, as the NIV puts it. Or he's not coming for a long time, as the New American Standard Bible puts it. And the truth is, that is an accurate observation. Well, at least as we tend to look at things from a human point of view, it's been 2,000 years. That's a long time for us. Empires have risen and crumbled into dust in that time. We talked a couple of weeks ago about how... Hang on, let me get to that point in a minute. The truth is, yeah, it's been 2,000 years, and that seems like a long time to us. Remember last week we figured out that it was Peter, at least we assumed that it was Peter, who kicked off this whole discussion with Jesus by making that really lame comment about, "Hey, look at these great stones in this temple. Aren't they cool?" Remember that? And that's what got Jesus talking about these things, about being ready. Well, whatever else you might want to say about Peter, Peter paid attention to what Jesus was saying. Listen to what Peter wrote two or three decades later. "It is important for you to understand what will happen in the last days. People will laugh at you. They will live following the evil they want to do. They will say, 'Jesus promised to come again. Where is he? Our fathers have died. But the world continues the way it was, the way it has been since it was made. But don't forget this one thing, dear friends. To the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years. 1,000 years is like a day. From God's perspective, which, by the way, is the only perspective that matters, it hasn't been very long. We aren't speaking wisely when we say, oh, it's been a long time. We talked a couple of weeks ago about how in the first century, at the beginning of the church, pretty much everybody who was a part of the church of the first century believed and was ready, was anxious for the Lord's return, and they believed it was going to happen in their lifetime. That's what they believed in the first century. But pretty much now, I know I'm generalizing here, but now in the church, pretty much everybody believes that, yeah, Jesus is coming, but it's not going to happen in my lifetime. Isn't that the way we think? Kind of like this evil servant that Jesus was talking about in this parable. No, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. Well, yikes, y'all. Yikes. Does that mean that Jesus was talking about me in this parable? Does that mean that I'm a wicked and evil servant? Well, I got to tell you, it's not a good start for us. If that's our mindset, that, oh, it's not going to happen in our lifetime, it's not a good start for us. Not if we want to be faithful and sensible servants, as Jesus talks about here. So that's the first thing we got to change. We have to change how we think about the Master's return. Well, that's easy to do, right? Changing your mind is easy, right? It's not. Changing your mind is probably the hardest thing you'll ever do. But we got to do it. Got to change how we think about the Master's return. And there's more, thankfully. Being a faithful and sensible servant has virtually nothing to do with what we say. And pretty much everything to do with what we do. With how we live. Look what Jesus says here. It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. There's a young priest who ran to the bishop's office one day and ran in and said, "Your Excellency, one of our parishioners out here just saw a vision of Jesus in the foyer." And the bishop said, "Well, don't just stand there. Act busy." It didn't have to be a Catholic. That could have been anybody, y'all. But faithful and sensible servants are those who do and who keep on doing. Who keep on doing. Even though our Master's return appears to be delayed. I want to quickly look at three areas where we should certainly be faithful. There are other things. You can think of other things, I'm sure, but let's just look at these three for now. Number one, let's be faithful with one another. Be faithful with one another. You see what Jesus said here? A faithful, sensible servant is one whom the master can give the responsibility of managing his other household servants and feeding them. We need to be faithful in all of our relationships. Paul put it this way: anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith. It's worse than an unbeliever. We might think of this verse as speaking of only about our blood relatives, but it includes our church family as well, our faith family. It certainly includes our faith family as well. The faithful and sensible servant that Jesus talks about here, he provided for all of the other servants in the master's household. One of the great things about being the preacher at this church is I get to look at all of you, not just on Sunday mornings when y'all are sitting in front of me, but I get to watch you. Y'all didn't know I was watching you, did you? I'm watching you. And I love watching all of you faithful and sensible servants here at the Tammany Oaks Church of Christ family, and how you take care of us. How you take care of us physically and spiritually. We've got some great teachers here at this church. We've got some great teachers. They prepare and they want to help us see Christ clearly so that we can live like Him. And they're doing a wonderful job. And not just the teachers, just the way you take care of each other, the way you come alongside each other. Listen, great is your reward. So, let's be faithful with one another. We also need to be faithful with our treasure. Jesus said about the wicked servant, he begins beating the other servants and partying and getting drunk. Notice how this evil servant didn't use the resources that was entrusted to him appropriately. All he did was indulge himself and abuse the others. For the evil servant, everything was about him. And everything was about right now, with no thought about the future. Here's something interesting that Jesus told us about our resources, about treasure. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so it makes me wonder sometimes if maybe one of the reasons that we're not ready for our master's return in the sense of we're not anxious for it, we're not longing for it, we're not praying that it will be soon, maybe it's because our heart is where our treasure is. And all of our treasure is here. Are we really being faithful with the treasure our master has entrusted to us? Let's be faithful with each other. Let's be faithful with our treasure. And finally, we need to be faithful with our time. Jesus said, "Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time?" The faithful servant, the one, he takes care of the others at the proper times. He was aware of the time. He used the time well, while the evil servant wasted time. The evil servant thought he had plenty of time to straighten up and start living right someday. Not how it works. You know, the key verse in our Wednesday night class that we've been doing for the last few weeks is Psalm 90, verse 12. I don't have a slide for it, but it says, "Teach us to number our days so we may gain a heart of wisdom." Understanding the limited nature of time makes you wise. Failing to understand that makes you foolish. But, as we saw, wasting time is not just foolish. It's evil. and it's wicked. And that should be horrifying to us. Being a good steward of time is so hard. It's so easy to be diverted. So easy to be distracted from what is important, from what is wise, from what we need to be doing. With the limited time, the limited number of days that we have, by the way, that number of days is less today than it was yesterday. For all of us. Time is life. Which means that when you're giving time to others, you're giving your life to them. So let's use our time and our lives wisely. So that's three areas that we need to always be sure that we're always being faithful in our relationships, with our treasure, with our time. Beyond those things, what is it specifically that God has called you to be doing? You need to be thinking about that, because in many ways our lives are going to be empty and they're going to be foolishly self-indulgent until we find out what it is that God wants you and me to be doing. And then do it. And do it faithfully. Like the faithful and sensible servant here in this parable. Faith is the key. As Brother Rod Stewart told us, right? The faithful, sensible servant had faith in his master's return. The other servant, the wicked servant, had no such faith. Here's a question, by the way, that lurked in the mind of Jesus throughout his ministry. When the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? Jesus was concerned about that. That question ought to haunt us as well. Will he find faith in you? Will he find faith in me? Will we be using our time wisely as we anticipate his soon return? Will we be taking care of each other? Will we be giving our lives for and to each other? Will we be ready? I pray we will. Let's stand and sing and encourage each other. Mm-hmm.